August 23rd, 2008, the Norris Group is hosting the event I Survived Real Estate 2008 at the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda, California. Proceeds from the event will benefit the Orange County affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure. The event seeks to bring together the real estate community, including realtors, auctioneers, investors, mortgage professionals, economists, data providers, and builders to discuss how we got here, how the respective industries are changing, and how we move forward and prosper together in 2008 and 2009. The event would not be possible without the generous help of the following partners: the San Diego Creative Investment Association and President Bill Tan, the Investors Workshops of Orange County and President Sean Watkins, Fry Wiles, the web development, internet marketing, and creative design firm, helping launch the event site isurvive2008.com. Proxibid, who will be airing the event live over the internet for those unable to attend live. The Nixon Library. Our good friends at MVT Productions, who always take care of our audio-video needs. And White House Catering, whose master chef will be providing the three-course meal for this black tie event. The following radio interview is in preparation for the live event.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're joined by Rick Sharga. He's Vice President of Marketing for RealtyTrack. He began that position in 2004. He's responsible for building and maintaining the RealtyTrack brand, corporate positioning and messaging, public and investor relationships. Rick, welcome to our show again.
Pleasure to be here.
It's been a while. I suppose the number of foreclosures has probably increased dramatically beyond anybody's wildest expectations at this point.
Yeah, the volume of foreclosure activity and the rapidity of the growth, I think, has stunned even the people that saw this wave of foreclosures coming. And it doesn't appear likely to ebb anytime soon.
I noticed that you were asked to speak in front of a group, and the news headline says, RealtyTrack Rick Sharga to address the latest foreclosure prevention legislation. Anything in the works that will reverse the trend?
Well, I think, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures, and there's a combined bill that's trying to work its way through the House and Senate right now that takes $300 billion and puts that into FHA guaranteed loans.
Mm-hmm.
Would theoretically wipe at least some of the worst performing and most problematic loans out of the system. There's another $30 billion that's attached to that. That would go in grants into hard-hit cities and neighborhoods and be used to sort of rehab those areas. And I think what we're really dealing with right now, Bruce, is a problem with market psychology. I think buyers are afraid to come in for fear that whatever they buy will be worth less than what they paid for it within a year. And the lenders are as risk-averse right now as they were willing to take ridiculous risks a couple of years ago. So perhaps something that big coming out of the government would be a signal to everybody that it's safe to get back in the water.
A lot of times you can't calculate that, the mental aspect, but it's there, and it is definitely hit both sides, like you just said, and probably extreme.
Well, what really hasn't had a lot of press coverage and a lot of people haven't talked about. We all talk about the lenders' excessive risk-taking, and we talk about, you know, investors speculating, and we talk about walking away. And what we fail to recognize or really talk about is that there were two big social trends that converged to start and really fuel the fire for this whole mess. One was that coming out of the dot-com meltdown, people started looking at homes not as a place to park their cars, but as a place to park their investment dollars. And they brought a much higher risk profile into the real estate market than what we're used to seeing. And at the same time that happened, we also saw the lenders change their basic practices from where they were lending and holding on to the loans to where they would lend and then distribute the loans and sell them off. So they were willing to take on more risk. And the intersection of those two points turned out to be a calamity.
You know, we pay attention to the list every day. And let's say I have 100 foreclosures, trustee sales I'll speak of now.
Mm-hmm.
90 of those 100 are owner-occupied, and 80% of those 90 were 100% financed. And I look at that list, and I know the investor is getting a lot of blame for being the speculator that's causing the problem. The speculator turns out to be the person that bought and lived in the home with nothing down for when with a loan amount they couldn't afford.
And you could also say that the speculator was whoever the investor was who funded the loan.
Absolutely. The system was a speculator.
Absolutely. And again, so you had behavioral tendencies on both the buyer and seller part, or the buyer and lender part, really, to be more accurate, that just flew in the face of common wisdom and common practices for 100 years.
What's interesting is if you read the definition of market value, it'll come down to, at the end, it says something about unaffected by any special financing.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had the entire industry provide special financing, which skewed the value of every house in the country. And now we're paying a price for that.
And the markets that are most devastated by foreclosure activity, California, Arizona, Nevada, Florida, for the most part, saw that in the extreme. You're absolutely right. With money as cheap as it was coming out of the Fed and the lenders falling all over themselves to basically write loans for properties that became wildly overvalued, it was a feeding frenzy that just built on itself for, 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Before it hit a wall. And it bounced pretty hard when it hit.
How does a company like RealtyTrack keep up with the sheer numbers that you're having to deal with? Because in California, the numbers are up 30 times?
We buy a bigger math processor for the computers. It is quite a challenge. And I mean, we're looking nationally at numbers that are up 48% year over year in May. We had the highest single month of foreclosure activity we've ever tracked in the month of May. Over 261,000 U.S. households received some sort of foreclosure notice last month. So it really does become a challenge to sort through this. And, you know, the reality is we're just counting the numbers. Imagine being in the county recorder's office or being at the lender. You know, I talked to one lender who foreclosed on 2,000 properties in 2006, and with basically the same staff and systems in place, foreclosed on 21,000 properties last year. So the system is completely overloaded, and it really is, in some cases, coming apart at the seams.
We actually bought a property that was listed in the MLS as an REO by an agent, went into escrow, only to find out they had foreclosed on it incorrectly. So the owner actually still owned it, and they had to start the whole process all over again.
And that anecdote is similar to things we're hearing all across the country. I don't know if you saw the recent Bloomberg story that talked about foreclosure activity being much higher around military bases than it was in the general populace.
No, I didn't.
Bloomberg called us and said, "Hey, we're doing some research and we wonder if." And the next thing we know, we're getting calls from the Joint Senate Economic Committee doing government research. But one of the things that troubles us about that is there are laws in place that prevent foreclosure from taking place on anybody in active military duty.
Yes.
And yet we're seeing the numbers skyrocket. And I've talked to some of the loan servicers who said, if we know, we won't foreclose. But my suspicion is with the volume of activity being at these astronomically high levels, a lot of people are falling through the cracks.
I'm sure that's true. Yeah. Does fraud play a big role in what we're experiencing right now as far as foreclosures going up?
Yeah, there's all sorts of fraud. When we first started talking about fraud a couple of years ago, it was mostly consumer activist groups talking about predatory lending. And what we're finding out now is that probably not a majority of foreclosures, but certainly a measurable percentage, were the result of very well-organized fraud rings of people conspiring to defraud both the buyer and the lender. By artificially inflating a property price and moving on. And it's, you know, much like the refereeing scandal in the NBA,
mm-hmm.
This is one of those things that gets to the very foundation of whether or not you can trust what's going on inside the industry. So a lot of people are very, very reluctant to move forward because they're not sure if the value of the property is really what they're being told it is.
Well, that's a very bad systemic problem to have because
then
you can't sell the paper either.
No, and again, I think that's one of the reasons the banks are so reluctant to participate in what would under normal circumstances be fundable loans.
Now, you just mentioned a very large number of foreclosures, and there's different stages. So sometimes, and it's becoming increasingly true, the same property will go through a default stage, then a trustee sale stage, and then become lender-owned. How do you guys avoid now counting that property three times?
Well, what we do is on any given month, we'll only report on a property one time. And usually, you'll only see a property being receiving filings twice, or I'm sorry, once in a given month. Then when we roll up the numbers on a quarterly basis, we'll also eliminate any multiple filing records.
Okay.
So we'll only count the household once, and that's that was something we did at the request of the Federal Reserve, and it's become a standard reporting metric for us right now. What's really problematic in our mind, at least, is that while the level of foreclosure activity is going up at a fairly rapid rate, the number of bank repossessions is actually going up at an even higher rate.
That's right. I was going to just ask you about that. The conversion rate of a notice of default to REO has never been this high, not even close.
Yeah, and we have a little trouble getting our hands around a specific conversion rate because a lot of these properties that are scheduled for auction actually never get to the auction or never go through the auction. But what I can tell you is that we have over 700,000 REOs in inventory right now, and that's up from about 440,000 at the end of last year and 220,000 at the end of the previous year. So at this rate, we'd forecast there'd be over 1 million REOs on the market by the end of the year. At this rate, that might be a low estimate.
It's hard to keep up with the estimates. It really is.
It really is, and every time we think we've hit a plateau that we can't possibly exceed, we get another spike. So it's interesting. We're going through one more big wave of subprime loan resets right now, and we'll get done with that just in time for the alt A's to hit the market. So, again, interesting times.
The alt A, those are different credit level people.
Yes.
But if they are underwater as far as the price, I don't see their percentages being much better as far as the percentages that will end up losing their property.
Yeah, there's a fairly intense industry debate going on right now whether alt A borrowers would be more likely to walk away from a property they're underwater on than a subprime borrower might be, and I think that's sort of trying to determine how many angels will fit on the head of a pin. But what I think is absolutely correct is that if the market continues to go sideways or pricing continues to fall, we're probably going to see alt A's perform no better than the subprime loans have performed. Clearly, the way out of this mess is for people to start buying and selling properties again. And if we're in a market that's stable, the hope is that the alt A borrower will be better able to withstand whatever kind of reset they have. But time's going to tell.
You know, I think what's interesting is their equity position starting when they have these adjustments occurring is way worse than the subprime's position was.
It can be, and again, we're doing this in general terms. Every loan is unique, so it's hard to get too general with some of these trends. But you're right, and an awful lot of these alt A's were 100% financing, and so if your home has gone down even marginally, your equity position is going to be damaged. And again, what consumer behavior will dictate is anybody's guess.
When we sell a property, we've been kind of keeping track through our lender who qualifies the buyers. 80% of the people attempting to buy the properties that we have for sale plan to close their escrow of their new purchase and walk away from their loan on their other one.
So they're basically more or less defrauding the lender because they know they're about to go into foreclosure on a property but aren't disclosing that.
Yeah, it would be hard to disclose that one because you're current right now, and you do tell them that there's a debt that exists on the property. Maybe it's become a rental, and usually the lenders are being very cautious, understanding that, okay, what are you going to do with that debt over there? So that becomes a problem. We check that out in advance, and we're not in escrow with that person. But I'm just telling you that is definitely on its way, where you have a lot of people that are still trying to own their next home, but their intent is to walk away from their other one after they already have their financing in place.
Yeah, we've heard that phenomenon from other loan servicers who are on the receiving end of that, and it's it's an interesting phenomenon. It also sort of gets back to the question of what the lenders can do to remedy this, and how much of a loss the lenders might be willing to look at in order to keep somebody in a house as opposed to lose in the scenario you just painted.
What's interesting about that, and that's always comes up when you have somebody say, okay, well, why don't we do something unique and do this, is you have the unintended consequence of the neighbor next door
finding
out that you got a $200,000 break on your loan, and once he figures out how you did it, maybe he would join join the party.
Yeah, and I've also heard that from lenders, and I know that's one of the issues. There are a couple issues that keep the lenders from negotiating too far. That's one. They don't want to set up a series of dominoes where all the housing prices are needed to be reset. And the other is that in a lot of cases, we talk about 100% financing. A lender knows there's a second loan on a property.
Yes.
And figures that's going to represent enough of a discount on the overall cost that they can afford to foreclose. And sell it, pretty much capture at least what they're owed, and wipe out the second. So it's a vicious market right now.
Well, in California, I can tell you they're absolutely incorrect. we're back into again. I look at these lists every day. We're back into 2003 pricing, and there's not 1% of the daily list that's the loan is that old.
You're probably right, although I'd suggest that it's probably more severe in some of the areas where you specialize.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
And I've seen some other parts of Orange County or L.A. County where when I look at individual properties, and again, I'm not doing an exhaustive survey, but when I look at individual properties, they're selling for roughly what the first loan was.
Okay.
But in a lot of cases, I mean, that's still representing a $150,000, $250,000 reduction in what somebody paid just a couple of years ago.
That's right. Yeah. What percentage of the homes in California or the country, whichever you're familiar with, are in some sort of foreclosure process?
We're over 2% of all U.S. housing units, and that actually is a little bit misleading because housing units include things that aren't your traditional single-family residential unit.
Mm-hmm.
So our best estimate is that we're actually somewhere between 3 and 4% of all U.S. households that are in some stage of foreclosure. The Mortgage Bankers Association suggests that we're at about 4.5% of all active loans in some stage of foreclosure. So it's no matter how you slice it, the number is, you know, 2 to 3 times higher than what we're used to seeing on an average cycle.
But it also means we got 95% or 96% that aren't.
Yeah, and I was on a panel with the chief economist at Fannie Mae last week, who reminded everybody that, you know, 92% of all loans are still current. And that's great. It's just, you know, contextually, you know, if we're talking about a third baseman for the Dodgers,
mm-hmm.
you know, batting .920, he'd be a Hall of Famer, you know, day one.
Right.
But when your expected success rate is 99%,
yes,
92 is bad.
That's right. Okay, that is definitely true. And the lender inventory is dictating the price of 100% of the inventory when they put it on sale.
Yeah, I mean, our estimate of a million REOs on the market by the end of the year means that somewhere between a quarter and a third of all the properties on the MLS by the end of the year will be a bank-owned home.
You know what's okay? I'm going to probably say that's exactly right, but the percentage of closings
is going to be much higher.
Way higher.
Yep. And one of the frustrations we have is we get that question a lot. You know, what's the percentage of properties on the MLS? What's the percentage of properties that are closed? And we haven't been able to find anybody with a broad enough MLS footprint nationally to map our data against to find out for sure. But that's a project we're trying to get nailed down sometime this quarter.
Well, in California, the California Association of Realtors projects 340,000 sales, total mm-hmm. sales. You'll end up having over 350,000 trustees deeds this year.
Amazing.
More trustees deeds than sales. And, of course, a lot of sales will be privately owned. So we're going to push a pile of trustees deeds or lender-owned properties into 09. Do you guys view 09 as more mild than 08 or more of the same?
Well, we had trouble imagining that 08 would be worse than 07, just to kind of, you know, give you full disclosure there. It sort of depends. I believe that when we're looking at these adjustable rate subprimes resetting, we really won't start to feel the fallout from those until late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter of this year, and that's going to push over into early 2009. I think the two big variables here are one, whether the government programs come to bear and actually have a material effect on the marketplace, and the other is how deep the recession is. If the recession's reasonably mild, and the government program kicks in, I could see 2009 being much less volatile than 2008, although it's still not going to feel real good. But otherwise, 2009 could just be a disaster.
Okay. Yeah, I'm kind of voting for the last one, unfortunately. And I'm so tired of thinking about this data and having no other conclusion, but it's not going to be pleasant. I really want to say something good again.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind, though, is as much as you and I are talking about how bad 2009 is going to be, it's not going to be that bad everywhere. We happen to be in ground zero in Southern California.
Yes.
Of the probably the worst fallout from the excesses of the early part of the decade. You know, you go to other parts of the country, the Carolinas up in the Northwest, even huge parts across the Midwest of the country, and we're not going to see this kind of real estate devastation in any of those areas.
And that's good. One of the things I think that's going to happen for California is the pricing level is going to decline to the point where we end up with a lot of migration someday.
That inbound for a change, because we've been losing population on a net basis for several years, and part of that is the affordability issue.
Yeah, I think people are going to actually be able to sit there in Texas and go, hey, we can move to Sacramento or Moreno Valley or whatever. There's lots of choices all of a sudden. And one of the reasons I think that'll happen is Texas has a 3% tax rate on their real estate, and we have Prop 13 and a 1% start rate,
yep,
or about there. So they'd actually save money monthly. So I do think that's going to happen.
What they need to do in order for that to work, Bruce, is they're going to need to be able to find jobs. And that's the other part of this that, I think that we probably underestimated the impact that the real estate market was going to have on jobs in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And the jobs that have been lost in lending and in construction and in other real estate related occupations are going to have to be replaced by something in order to fund that migration.
That's true. We're going to have a better job picture. We only have about another minute and a quarter. Tell us about the new connection with auctions. Auctions have become very popular, but attending live ones, I just want to let you know the population of the attendees is down by maybe 70%.
Well, and that's not a big surprise, because a lot of the live auctions are either ballroom-style auctions where the truth is you're not going to always get as good a buy as you think you are, and the trustee sales, as you know, there's really not much margin in a lot of these properties because of the 100% financing. We believe that ultimately the Internet is going to provide a much more efficient means of transacting on real estate, and that auction with the participation of a real estate professional is going to become a more acceptable way of doing business. So we've recently partnered with a company called Bid for Assets,
mm-hmm,
that has an online auction platform, where we're doing some beta testing and getting some very very positive results and feedback from our customers who like the approach.
I went on the website this morning and took a look at it. So I would be definitely a participant. One of the challenges, and this is some of the auction companies have raised suspicion, in that they bid on the properties on behalf of the lender.
Mm-hmm.
So the process has to be transparent, where you know that the lender owner can't do that.
Yeah, and we'll probably have to look at some sort of restrictions, limitations on those things going forward. Right now, you can see who's bidding in the process, but there's no way of telling necessarily that they are not an employee of the bank.
Exactly.
So I mean, as long as we've had auctions, we've had shill bidders, and we've had plants in the audience doing this stuff. So again, I think one of the things the Internet does is bring more transparency to the process, and hopefully we'll be able to leverage the technology to make this a more efficient way to dispose of properties.
All right. Rick, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us again. Rick Sharga with Realty Track.
Rick, my pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.